You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Happy Easter, everyone, and welcome back to Vox Markets Live. My name is Paul Hill, and I'm delighted again to be able to speak to equity analyst and stock market commentator Paul Scott to discuss all things small caps. So welcome, Paul.
Thanks, Paul. Hello to you and hello to everyone. Happy Easter. Yes.
Yeah, well, it's sort of been another busy corporate reporting week. But before we run through some stocks, have you been buying and selling anything over the last sort of fortnight, Paul?
Nothing significant, but I can't remember if we spoke about this last week, but I have bought some Treat. I think that was last week, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I bought a few Dunelm. That reported nicely today, so I'm pleased with that one. Just a little bit of tinkering around the edges, but nothing, no significant buys or sells. How about you?
No, well, I've just got no cash. I think I'm probably my lowest level of cash in the portfolio than I've had for probably 10, 15 years. But I will get, in 2 weeks' time, a big payout on Eagles. So I've been putting up a list, like I think you have, of a stock watch list that I want to actually buy. So I've probably got about 5 or 6 purchases to make over the next sort of month or 2 months. So it'll be something interesting anyway.
I look forward to hearing about those. I don't suppose I can coax you into telling us now, can I?
Well, I don't know exactly what I'm going to buy and how much, because I will be adding to some positions. The problem I get at certain things, the ones I really like, I can well be getting up, well, I have already got up to over, you know, towards 3% of the company.
And if you do that,
you have to start reporting it. So I want to avoid that. But there's still quite a few bits and pieces that I'd like to add to. And then there will be, you know, some new positions. And I'm just heavily into small caps at the moment. So I may want to go a bit further up the food chain just to give me some stability. But
I think quite a lot of mid caps are very attractive at the moment. So I've broadened my size, market cap size, quite a bit in the last 6 months or a year. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, anyway, let's talk a bit about the market. We had a big bellwether stock in the FTSE 100, Bunzl, reporting. I think it was yesterday. The shares got absolutely hammered, down 25%. A bit of an angel in investors' eyes previously, but it came out with a trading update saying that it was taking down full year 25 guidance, largely because of weakness in North America. And the sort of the question is one about Bunzl in terms of whether it is a bit of a fallen angel and people want to look at it as a big cap. But more importantly, if there's any read across to other companies, because it's a distributor of everyday items to sort of restaurants, hotels. So it's a quite good litmus test of the health of the US economy. And if it's saying it's going south, which is largely lots of the trucking companies have been doing the same in the States, that might be a bit of a sort of like an early warning system, where the canary in the coal mine for other businesses. What do you think?
Yeah, you could well be right. I mean, I should preface this by saying Bunzl's not a share I've looked at, but because it came up on my, I think it was the top faller yesterday in the market, if you exclude the nano caps, which I always do routinely, down 27% yesterday morning from 10 billion market cap to 7.5 roughly. So I thought, I've got to have a look at this to see what's going on, expecting a really bad profit warning. But it struck me as quite a soft profit. Well, no, it's a soft Q1 it's had, as you say. Sounds like the problems were out in America. And it lowers guidance, but The trouble is, I couldn't get hold of any broker notes on my main source, which is Research Tree. So private investors are really in the dark, while the institutions and the high net worths get all the broker updates, don't they? Giving them privileged information, which is very unfair, I think. And usually, if the shares are down 27%, as this was, it's because there have been some big downgrades from the premium brokers. And they talk about significant uncertainties, quote, for the tariff side of things. Horrible overgeared balance sheet. So I did look into the fundamentals of Bunzl, and quite a lot of mid to large caps, you know, in the UK have got really horrible overstretched balance sheets. They've chased acquisitions. Another one today, I saw a similar sort of thing. It temporarily escapes me what the company name was, but Bunzl certainly, its balance sheet is negative 900 million net tangible asset value. So these type of groups, I think, have overacquired, hollowed out their balance sheets. It's all goodwill at the top. You see, write that off, and these things have got threadbare balance sheets. So I think because of the debt, I just wouldn't touch it. I just think it's just not something that appeal to me at all. It's not even if it's on a low PE now, Bunzl.
Yeah.
To this 27% drop, I don't really understand why the valuation was as high as it was to start with. So over to you. You sound a lot more knowledgeable on this than me.
Well, I sort of like re-engineered their forecast and their guidance, because they're sort of like they're implying they're going to have a weak EBIT margin in the first half, which will recover in the second half and give you a blended of just less than 8%. And if you run that through on a sort of like a softish top line growth, then you get to around about, I got about 193p per share EPS if you did their normal sort of tax rate, which puts them on about a 12 times PE. However, I would, the thing I would have a struggle with is actually tariffs, because they're basically a distributor of everyday items, which you can guarantee probably 50 to 6% comes from Asia or from China. And therefore, they're going to go up in price. And they may not have totally gone up at the moment because of the 90-day sort of pause on the US tariffs. But that could well sort of like, you know, have a problem for them. And I bet they'll struggle passing on those extra costs. So that would be my biggest problem with it.
The thing is, though, with that, though, Paul, surely, given that we can all agree that these products are all made in the Far East, everybody's just going to have to put out their prices to American customers, aren't they? So I can't see that Bunzl would be at a competitive disadvantage unless there's some factories in America actually domestically producing these things, which I would imagine is highly unlikely. So I don't know.
If everything was a sort of like a equal, you know, level ground, you know, playing field, then yes, I would agree. What you get, unfortunately, is substitution, because if a sort of like a caterer, is supplying plastic knives and forks, then they're looking for something cheaper than disposables or whatever it is, consumables that they currently do, and they look for alternatives. Likewise with sort of like, you know, linen and, you know, sort of hotels and this sort of stuff, you know, guess then they get a discount if they don't, you know, wash it as often, or they do. So what I'm saying is that you find, you know, there is a price sensitivity to consumer stuff. So
I think that's a very good point, actually. I haven't thought of that, but you could well be right. Restaurant, you know, takeaways might just say, oh, we've decided to go green. We're not going to give out any plastic cutlery at all now. Eat it with your fingers.
Which we all did anyway.
Yes. Yeah, very interesting. But I think some of these, what was it? Oh, I know the one today that was horribly overgeared, Rentokil.
Oh, yes.
That put out an okay trade. Well, I thought it was pretty lackluster, actually, trading update today. But you dig into the numbers, it's the same sort of thing. They've chased growth by making all these acquisitions. It's not obvious that the acquisitions have added any value. Mm-hmm. And they've hollowed out the balance sheet. So, yeah, I think quite a lot of these, actually, these UK larger caps are more vulnerable, or just as vulnerable to profit warnings as small caps.
Yeah, I think they've got to.
Your small caps, many of them have got net cash. So, you know, if funnily enough, the higher risk could be with some of these geared up large caps, maybe.
Yeah, no, I would agree. Okay, good. If anybody wants to ask myself or Paul any questions, then please put them in the chat bottom and read that. I got one from Ben Sharman already. He's asking about Oxford instruments, sort of mid-cap. I think it's a 250. Does sort of scientific instruments for, I think it's for the R&D sector, for semiconductors, for healthcare. Came out with a good positive statement this week. And people have obviously been worried about what the tariff impact is going to be in terms of spend, you know, people stopping to spend R&D and lab work and stuff. But they seem to be bucking the trend. If I remember rightly, they had like-for-like growth. Anyway, I don't know whether you had a look at this one at all. Oxford Instruments.
Yeah, I think I've looked at everything this week. So the entire market, well, me and the team. We did, yeah, the Oxford Instruments, sorry, my computer's playing up. It reported yesterday, didn't it? I don't know, Oxford Instruments, that's it, OXIG. I don't know anything about it. Market cap's just below $1 billion. But I did just a quick desktop review of its accounts. Yeah, it sold off quite a bit. What period is that chart, Paul?
That's a 10-year chart.
Yeah. I was going to say, if you condense it to more current, it's derated quite a lot.
Yeah.
You can see to that recent low around £15. And I think this is actually looking nice value now. It did a March year-end trading update yesterday. Strong H2, it said, and the full-year results are in line with expectations. didn't say anything about tariffs, although it does say, or we said, I can't remember, that it is quite diverse and has global operations. It's got a nice balance sheet with 224 million net positive net tangible asset value. So this is literally just a quick overview, knowing nothing about the business, but just looking at the finances and the track record, high operating margin. I think this looks a nice quality business, actually. I would say I marked it green on my traffic light system. But as I say, I don't know anything about the business, but it's past my sort of initial test of the numbers to say, yes, I think this is worth looking into in more detail.
Yeah, no, I would agree. I think green is you bang on there, Paul. It's a quality company. In fact, I think you got a bid a few years ago from Spectris because there's a lot of synergies because they do a lot of this type of specialist instrumentation. It's a world leader in what it does, really sort of like microscopic, sort of like, you know, measurement equipment, et cetera. And I think it does nano stuff as well in semiconductor. The only thing which would stop it being acquired is whether it becomes a national asset, a national champion that the government decide, actually, we don't want this to go to anybody, you know, into enemy hands. But Spectris being a UK business, then would be able to buy it. But I'm sure a lot of people would love this in their portfolio. So, yeah, I'm with you. I get it about 15 times PE going forward.
Yes. I mean, for something with such high operating margins, I think the operating margins were getting on for 20% or something, which is telling you it's got really good really good pricing power. It's quite focused, I think. It's coming back to me, the commentary from the company. I say that I think they look at particular niches, don't they? And they spend a lot on R&D, I think, as well. So, yeah, I mean, to me, this has all the hallmarks of looking like a good quality business.
Yeah, it's quite ironic, really. An R&D company spending a lot on R&D.
Yes, I guess so, yeah.
Okay, yeah, right. Hey, let's move to another one, which is maybe a potential fallen angel. It's software or telco billing software company, Cerillion. It came out with a trading update. I think it held its full year, but said that the first half was going to be relatively soft. It was down, in fact, but the second half was going to be strong because they did see it. But obviously investors don't like a strong second half weighted sort of financial outlook unless it actually occurs. So I think the shares were sold off. I get them trading at now, they're still a punchy 25 times, but they've come a long way. I don't know what your latest view on this one is.
Well, I've been a long-term bull on Cerillion. Really, really incredibly impressive track record on that one, if you look at the numbers. So, I remember working through this one. I mean, the H1 results, oh no, it was a trading update, but similar sort of thing really for March 2025. So it was a September year end. adjusted EBITDA went down 10%, but they emphasized it was due to timing of license wins. The only negative really on Cerillion is it's still heavily dependent on perpetual license wins. Right. The recurring revenues are a relatively low proportion of revenues for a software company. So it does have that inherent lumpiness, higher risk of profit warning than with a SaaS only business. And it said, and two brokers, Singers and Pamuels, put out supportive notes explaining, actually, yes, this is just timing of contracts that renewed in H2 last year and renewed in expected to renew in H2 this year, but renewed in H1 last year. So it all sounds credible up until the point when you look at the full year expectations, which show negligible growth on last year. So that kind of undermines what the company and the brokers are saying here. So I think you have to, it's still not cheap, as you say. I'm staying at green on this because I actually think that it's such a quality business and it has had that snowball effect from contract wins where each bigger client win becomes a reference site for more. Yeah. And the last 4 years for Cerillion have been astonishing. It's just got the right software, cloud-based telecoms billing software at the right time. And the customer list is getting better and better and bigger and bigger. So I hope, I don't hold it personally, but I hope this is just a bit of a bump in the road. It looks to me as if it's a little bit of a timing stroke pause in the growth. Because you can't keep growing at 30, 40% per annum, can you? You're going to get a... it's a spectacular business, though. Net cash of 31 million. Yeah. Owner managed. The guy running it is a very humble, straightforward guy who I've interviewed. Have you interviewed him, Paul, as well?
No, I haven't. No, no.
He's a good one to get on board. Very straightforward. No, I really like Cerillion, but little bit of a wobble this week.
It would take a brave man to bet against that chart, wouldn't it? It's 12 bagged, 13 bagged in 10 years and probably around about 8 or 9 bagged in 5. So you've got to be, the trend is your friend on this one until it's broken, I think.
Yes. I mean, I think it'd be one of those that I always keep in the back of my mind, a sort of mental watch list, thinking that's the sort of thing I would buy if they did get a gap in the orders and it warned on profits and it did the 30, 40% plunge. You'd nip in and buy, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Because it's such a quality business.
Yeah. Okay, good. Let's switch sectors. We got Paul the Parrot. He's asking about plant hire and equipment rental firm VP Group, which supports the construction, infrastructure and housing sectors. Paul says that there's been CP7 delays, which is the rail, and obviously there's been problems in construction. But I think there's strength in water and with AMP8 and transmission, basically, the national grid. Anyway, a lot of moving parts there. What's your latest on this one?
Well, I like it. It's owner managed as well, isn't it? The founder, I think, owns 50%.
Yeah, that's right.
Looking to retire. So I think he's been trying to sell this for several years, hasn't he? So I think at some point you could get a nice surprise and just find that, agreed, recommended takeover bid, and the 50% owner's not going to sell it cheap. That's the other thing that's nice about that. It dropped 5% on a trading update, full year trading update on, which was Tuesday this week, in line with expectations. So a bit surprised it dropped, but mixed outlook, I've decided to summarize it as. And it doesn't say whether it's currently trading in line or not. Singers did actually slightly drop the forecasts for 7% for the new financial year. So I always struggle with this. I don't know what your view is, Paul, but when the broker drops the forecasts for the new financial year by 7%, would you classify that as a profit warning or not? Because I don't know. What do you think?
I just cast it as profit downgrade. They've put through the number, decrease, but that doesn't necessarily mean, the long term outlook for the business is any worse. I mean, I would say they're servicing some good secular growth trends. There's no doubt about it. We need massive investment in water, in our electricity infrastructure. We also need massive investment in our housing. So it will happen. And these guys probably have around 75% exposure. They have a bit of oil and gas and a bit of testing as well, but that's pretty much, small beer. And I think they also do rental of tracks on fields, like for events and stuff like that. But their main is construction, infrastructure and housing. So And they're one of the big three in the UK with specialist equipment. And they're not like a I think they're a much better quality than Speedy Hire, and certainly much better than HSS, and probably better than A-Plant or the old the Sunbelt one. But it's a tough market. Let's be clear about it. It's cyclical. But they will have their day in the sun again. It just depends on how long that's going to take, in my view.
Yeah, I mean, one of my co-writers, John, he reviewed this, and he wasn't keen at all on VB. He said, well, where's the growth? You know, it's all pretty lackluster. And I said, yeah, but we're in a cyclical downturn where a lot of these... So if you roll it forward and think, well, at some point the economy should be recovering, these are the sort of guys that get that leveraged upside with better utilization, higher pricing, all those things. So this is the point in the cycle where I think we should be factoring in cyclical upside. So if you can buy it on a current year PE of about 8 or something, I don't know the figure for VP, but I think it's in that ballpark, then that to me seems like a bargain. But we had to agree to disagree on that. But I'm the boss, so I marked it the colour. I put the colours in. So I put it as amber green. So moderately positive for VP Group. And Speedy Hire, I don't know if you want to talk about that one as well.
Yeah, well, go on then. Quick mention, yeah.
Quick mention, that reported this week again. This is another one where it looked like they said they're in line, but then one of the big brokers dropped the forecast by about 20%. So is it in line or is it a profit warning? I think Speedy Hire is so accident prone, but that's another one where you could have lovely leveraged upside if and when it starts to report better business. So your view on that?
I don't think the plant hire that they do is as specialized as VP. Okay. VP do a lot of trench work where basically there's very few major competitors because the capital equipment you have to buy is really expensive and you've got to maintain it. They go head to head in the housing sector, no doubt about it. Right. And there's also in the housing sector now you've got more B&Q, I think, with what's the one where they, I can't remember, tools something or a tool station, is it, or something? I can't remember.
I've always been saying that was equipment hire, but my readers told me off and said, no, it's not. It's sale of equipment, apparently, tool station.
Yeah. Well, if they're selling it to tradesmen, the tradesmen aren't renting them as much.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah. Sorry. Yeah. I see what you mean.
It has an effect of just extra volume. But if I wanted to get into the sector, but I think that personally I'm putting my money elsewhere. But if I did, I'd go for VP. I think it is the best quality in it for me anyway.
I agree with you. Actually, I've avoided HSS ever since it floated, because it was floated by venture capitalists who did their usual thing, hollowed it out, filled it up with an insurmountable debt, and it crashed almost immediately on floating. However, the recent news in HSS made me take a fresh look at it, because they've just sold off, I think, their Irish division, which straightens out their balance sheet. So for that reason, HSS might be worth a fresh look.
Possibly. Anyway, good. Okay, let's move to another sector. We've got Malcolm CC. He's asking about Audio Boom, which is basically the challenger to Spotify podcasts, etc. Had some quite rock star fund managers who have been sort of tipping it. Lawrence Halls from Onward Opportunities quite likes it, and I think Richard Crowe also has mentioned it a couple of times. How do you see Audio Boom?
Well, I'm neutral on it. I know people always say, oh, you always put it down, but I'm only mentioning negative aspects, but I think there are some positive aspects as well. The results were not as good. This is a problem. I think we've spoken about this before. It tends to ramp the shares through KPI type updates where everything sounds amazing. But then when you see the actual numbers, you think, well, this thing's got a threadbare balance sheet. You see that the onerous project provisions are consuming all the cash. Management, I think, have excessive personal rewards, and the growth isn't actually that good. The full year results, I think, were a bucket of cold water over the bulls. But I would then say, look, it's only valued at about 50 million. It's the fourth biggest podcast platform. Actually, you know, if a few things start to go really, really well there, you could see that being a major multi-bagger, which it's been in the past. So I think as a share to just be a bit sceptical about, not to fall in love with, but to see this as maybe a speculative trading idea, I wouldn't dissuade anyone from having a punt on this, actually.
Yeah, yeah. One thing which puts me off is their distribution is controlled by two people. It's by Apple and by Spotify. Because if they ever decided they want a bigger share of the revenues associated with their podcast, then they they'd struggle basically Audio Boom to negotiate that away unless they could go in on their own, and they just can't because everybody's on Spotify or on Apple or another one of those big sort of providers, aren't they?
You're right. With my personal podcasts, Apple is by far the biggest. Yeah. Then Spotify, others in total are only about 10%. That's a really good point. The other thing is Audio Boom couldn't make the business model work for many years just being a publisher. So the way they have actually improved performance somewhat is by focusing on obviously developing the ad revenues, but also sponsoring podcast creators.
Yes. But
the trouble is with that, as soon as their podcast takes off, they just say, right, I'm going. Someone else has made me a bigger offer. And they dropped a massive clanger with these onerous contracts management did. You know, that was like a £10 million mess up or something. Which, again, why, you know, could they make the same sort of misjudgment again? So, I don't like the business model at all. But I just think as something to punt on, it's quite an interesting trading idea, I think. Yeah.
Well, they might come knocking at your door to exclusively get your daily podcast. Yeah. What about that? They'll give you a couple of million quid for the next 5 years.
Well, more like a couple of hundred quid to shut me up and not say anything rude about them.
Yeah, you're probably right, actually. That would do it work well. Okay, it'd be remiss of me not to talk about an IPO this week. We had an accountancy firm, third largest in the UK, MHA. There's no chart, obviously, because the shares have only just traded. They raised nearly 100 million, 98 million pounds, largely to pay off debt and to partners who are actually exiting. They've got a turnover last year of around about 150 million. I don't know if I believe the figures, but in their prospectus, they say they have EBIT of 61 million. If you run it on 61 million, if you run it at 61 million, you get basically a PE ratio of about just over six. Now, I suspect there's some probably one-off gains in there, so it may not be what they go for. There's no brokers because there's a blackout period for the first month of trading, so you won't see it. But the reason why I wanted to raise it and just put it on people's watch list, in a month's time when we do get access to these brokers, have a look at this because it might be an opportunity to actually get, if you want to get into accountancy and professional services, this is growing quite quickly. Has been over the last 10 years. 50% of it is accountancy, and they call themselves like 80% recurring. It isn't. It's repeat revenues because most of it's sort of tax and audit and stuff like this. Doesn't look stupidly priced to me.
Yeah, I'm not generally keen on these professional services ones, other than Begbies and what's the other one?
FRP.
FRP, yeah, I think they're good counter-cyclical things at the moment and very cheap. So I wouldn't be personally looking to invest in this latest float. However, I did get an email from a friend who works in the city saying, Paul, you should have a look at this because they've got it away in the worst stock market conditions you can imagine, but they've still got this float away. And I thought, well, actually, that's a good point, isn't it? I just assumed it would be Paul's. What's it called? MHA, you say?
MHA, yeah. It's part of the Baker Tilly sort of brand.
Baker Tilly, yeah. I had a feeling it was, it's part of that. I must have a closer look at it because I kind of assumed the float with the IPO would fail. So the fact they got it away says something interesting, maybe.
Yeah. Well, if you do speak to your friend again, ask him what he's seen in the, basically in the broker notes and just sort of like, because it'd be very interesting to see what they do. I mean, I just can't believe if they do 61 million again this year in EBIT, and I say it's trading at about six times, when I work it out, it's trading at basically 6.1 times PE. I'm sure there's some one-off gains in there, but if there isn't, then it's very, very cheap and you will see it re-rate once people get hold of those reports.
Yeah, you have got obviously the conflict of interest, though a lot of people, myself included, don't like founders exiting and these mixed structures where you have the people who are actually winning over the clients and the contracts have just sold a big part of their stake to cash in. You know, isn't there a temptation for them to work less and spend more time floating around the Med on a yacht? You know, I think it's all about the accountancy is very opaque, where you get these deemed remuneration accounting adjustments as well. Yeah. So I tend to steer away from that, but I promise you, I will have a proper look at that when it next reports.
Good. Okay, let's stay in financial service. Let's move to a specialist fund manager. Let's go to Mercia Asset Management. They reported this week, had some very good, but basically it said that it was exceeding expectations, largely because I think the cost line was less than expected. It does specialist sort of investments in sort of venture capital, in private equity, and in private credit, largely focused on regional businesses, heavily into the Midlands, hence Mercia, and the North. Even after the bounce, I get it such that their net tangible assets are 35p per share, and their net asset value, if you strip out goodwill, is 43. The shares are trading about 30 today. So I don't know if you had a look at this one, Paul. Looks interesting.
Yes, one of my team spotted this yesterday, Dave, and he said, "This looks interesting, Paul. Shall I spend a bit of time on it?" So he spent half the morning going through it all and came back. And he's normally very sceptical. He came back to me and said, "This is actually looking really interesting." Even though they said was materially ahead, this was a trading update for March 25 year end for Mercia. Singers have raised the forecast profit 18%. And then for 2026 forecast, Singers are saying there's upside risk, which always seems a strange wording to me. Yeah. But you think of risk as downside, don't you? But
it means happy days for shareholders, hopefully.
Yeah, it could do, couldn't it? Very, very interesting. It's got this direct investment portfolio where it's invested its own money, but it is looking, I believe, to liquidate, gradually wind down that side of it to free up cash, which it then wants to use for acquisitions. And Mercia itself has over a third of its market cap in net cash, plus all these investments. And it gives a list, I think, of the top 10 investments. These are in private companies. So you can go to Companies House and look up those companies. Also, it's not all equity investments. A lot of it is debt investments. I think it looks very interesting. But the big question mark is whether it's valued those direct investments accurately, isn't it? And they're always going to be, the share price will always be well at a significant discount to that type of illiquid pool of investment. So, yeah, we've given it green. We think Mercia looks quite interesting.
Yeah. What I like about it is most of the funds, or all of the funds, they're closed and they've got certain time. Yeah, they'll be 5 years, 10 years, etc. They're not open-ended like most of the active fund managers, that money can move and out and you get withdrawals. And so, therefore, their fee revenue go forward is pretty, is almost dead, is recurring. Unless those companies, the mandates change. Plus, I think they get quite a lot actually from the government, or have done historically, as a way of, you know, trying to accelerate growth outside of the Southeast. So they meet that mandate. So yeah, no, I'm with you. I think with sticky capital, and if they've got a good sort of selection for their own account, which you should say you can go and have a look at, it's not a bad fund manager, this one, actually. It's good, strong balance sheet.
We think that, and I think I remember correctly, it said it had zero redemptions, which would tie in with maybe some of the, maybe that which does tie in with them being locked, the funds locked in. And I think they do quite a lot of EIS, VCT type
they do a lot.
Investments, which again gets a very favourable tax treatment for the investors who are more likely to put the money in. So, we think it's an interesting niche, this one, Mercia. Yeah.
Okay, we've got Stephanie's asking about YouGov, which just unfortunately seems to keep going down. It's basically...
Have you got the chart on that one, Paul?
Yeah, it's the polling guys, and they also do sort of like data for lots of businesses in the US and the Europe and the UK, etc. It used to be a darling, but they've really come down. Let me put the chart on.
Yeah,
there you go, look.
Actually, hasn't it? Yeah, I think from memory, I don't think that's reported in the last week. But when it last reported, I remember it was the balance sheet that put me off. They did a lot of acquisitions. Doesn't look as if they added value. Management had to change because CEOs have to take responsibility if it happens on their watch. He'd ramped up costs in anticipation of recovery, which didn't happen. The new guys reverse ferreted on the cost. So... I don't know. I honestly don't know whether this is an opportunity or whether it's in decline, Paul. I can't make up my mind. So what do you think?
I personally think that it's a good quality business. It's got, you know, lots of sort of like, you know, excellent services. I'm not sure how impacted it's going to be by generative AI. You know, these light, I mean, they're just so, so good in terms of giving answers out. Do you need a polling business to be able to do it? And I'm not sure. You might find some lower hanging fruit can now be done through Gen AI to give you the answers. You haven't got to go through their services. I think they're in a hard box. Plus they've got, as you rightly point out, now the balance sheet's a bit stretched because they bought that big acquisition, the GfK business, the polling business out in Europe a few years back. I don't know. It is definitely cheap. I haven't yet come to it whether it's a value trap or a value play, but it isn't something I would be putting my money into immediately.
No, same here. I think with a lot of these things, it's a good idea to do the research and have some abbreviated notes so that you can react fast when trading updates come out. Yeah. You know, and if you've got it on that watch list, and you know the story pretty well, you can then see a trading update and think, ah, right, this has turned the corner. I need to dive in and hit the buy button at 8 o'clock, which is where we have a massive advantage over fund managers. They can't do that. They're stuck high and dry. But obviously, we've got to get it right. that's the thing. Yeah, here we are. 31st of March, H1 results showed adjusted EPS down 18%, but it did confirm inline trading for market expectations for July 2025. So this balance sheet is really bad. Net tangible asset value minus 241 million. You probably won't ever get any decent dividends out of it. That's why it matters. And you could end up, worst case scenario, with an emergency placing and being diluted. So this is why, especially when the economy is so flat to deteriorating, I think just keeping away from these lousy balance sheets is makes a lot of sense. But you know, somebody who dives in could double or triple their money, couldn't they?
So you
just don't know.
Yeah. Okay, good. Let's move to, I know it's not a subject that you quite sort of comfortably cover. It's basically gold. We've got two investors. We've got Gary Jordan and UK Investor, both asking about Serabi Gold, which is a Brazilian gold miner. And I guess it comes down to the expression, even in a bear market, there's always a bull market somewhere, because just look at this chart. It's done absolutely brilliant. Not surprisingly, being a gold miner, it produces gold and the gold price has gone up. And so the shares have likewise. I don't know if you've had a look at this one at all or any quick thoughts.
No, I don't cover resource stocks at all. And it's not because I'm making any judgment on the sector. It's just because it's specialized. So I don't have that specialized knowledge. But yeah, obviously, gold is doing tremendously well, isn't it? Looking at the forward stats, I've got it on a forward PE of 3.4. Is that right?
That's correct, Joe.
Wowee. And what's the balance sheet like? Do we know what the balance
sheet's good.
Yeah, that looks quite interesting, doesn't it? No divvies, though. Are we expecting divvies from it?
Yeah, what they said in their trading update is that they're looking to return capital to shareholders because they've got a good balance sheet and they're going to generate far more cash as well. And they haven't yet decided how they're going to do that. It'll probably be through share buybacks rather than dividends, because there'll be a withholding tax on UK investors who own a Brazilian company. The PLC is UK, but the actual earner is in Brazil, so they'll need to play withholding tax on it. The other thing to watch on gold, I mean, you've had one of the reasons why gold has done so well is because of central bank buying and instability, and Russia and China wanting to de-dollarize their currency effectively to come out of dollars, and so they can't be frozen by, you know, basically the Federal Reserve.
Yes.
And they've got gold. So they've been heavily buying in the last 2 or 3 years. Plus you've had the geopolitical instability, and now you've got worries about Trump in terms of, you know, fiat currency being devalued. So you've got all of those. But having said that, what you do get, you get two things acting the other way. One, when the price goes up, then there's going to be less people willing to buy jewelry, gold and jewelry, because it's flipping expensive. It's twice the price as it was before. And you have seen that demand decline. And the demand for jewellery is twice as big worldwide as it is from central banks. It hasn't yet sort of like made much of a dent into the demand. So you will get that substitutional effect at some point in time. And then the other side of the coin, I mean, I don't know about you, but this is the most crowded trade I've ever known in terms of a bit like AI and internet. Everybody's talking in the internet, on the websites, everybody's talking about gold. And yes, it's done really, really well. But I just feel like it isn't an unknown trend, this, is it? People are just, everybody's into gold. I'm not, but I don't like it because it doesn't pay a yield. But so I would say that is a time, I would say, with Serabi Gold. It's dead cheap. It's doing really, really well. It could get taken out because is M&A. If I've gone from in the last year, I've gone from 50p to £1.70, I would be just top slicing this of myself, just taking some of it off, because there's a following wind, and you run your winners until the trend changes. And I don't know, what's your view?
Yeah, I mean, as I say, not my error at all, but I completely understand why people are excited about this, because it is fantastic. You can't value them on a PE basis because it's feast or famine, isn't it? And you look back at the long-term financial performance of these things, and you have to see moments like we're seeing at the moment as a burst of profitability that may or may not last. Somebody was saying, it might have been actually when I interviewed the CEO of H&T. I have a feeling he said, or it might have been you, somebody said to me that apparently jewellery, people have an absolute cap of what they're prepared to pay for a gold ring, for example.
Oh, right, okay.
And demand, it's very price elastic, I've been told.
Sensitive, jewelry.
Yeah, sensitive to price changes. And they might reformulate the ring to make sure it's still $1,000. And the other thing is, obviously, the gold price is shooting up, but it's measured in dollars, which is shooting down. Some of my readers have started quoting the gold price. They converted into sterling, which I think is a good idea, actually, because then you can compare it with. But no, it looks an exciting area. As Jim Cramer says, there's always a bull market somewhere.
I was wondering who said that. I was trying to remember. Okay, good. We got Lucky Luke. He's asking about Cuth, which is the mental health sort of like systems provider. It's the number one player in the UK by a mile. Does it all for sort of like students and school children and stuff like that. But it's got some landmark contracts out in the States, particularly out in California. Put some decent growth actually together in a trading update or some results this week. I don't know if you had a look at this one at all.
Yeah. No, we look at everything. So I've got a proper team now. You see, there's four of us. So we can pretty much cover everything. So this reported on Tuesday this week. And the profits were fabulous. This was the December 2024 year end results. Very, very good. I mean, it went from a loss last year to a big profit on revenue that doubled to 67 million and a 10 million PBT. Yeah. And bear in mind, this thing's only valued at 50 million quid. Also, it's got 22 million of net cash. So that's 40% of the market cap. So optically on these numbers, it looks stunningly cheap. But obviously, there's always a reason for that, isn't there? Yeah. And the reason is that the market is looking at this and saying, well, that was a bit of a one-off year. You've got key contract risk, as you mentioned. I mean, the California contract is by far the biggest. And the worm, what sounded like unfounded newspaper or internet rumors about them possibly losing the contract. I think that was late last year. Yeah, it was October, because the share price just went down vertically for 3 weeks, didn't it? So, but I can't ignore how good these numbers were. So for that reason, I've gone cautiously positive on it at Amber Green, but I was very careful in my reporting to say I have absolutely no idea what the future holds, and I'm not making any predictions because you have got contract risk here for sure. You know, if it's the next best thing and they keep winning more contracts, this is global, as you say, this could be a 10 bagger.
It reminds me of
what
the oil stock that you own.
Well, that's a bit more speculative, but You're right. Yeah, it's got that multi-bagger potential. But yeah. You do hear rumblings from people about this.
Yeah.
From people who say, well, actually, you know, maybe the service isn't up to scratch. And I mean, they've grown the thing at a phenomenal rate, which hats off to management, you know, to actually win and implement these contracts involving, I think, hundreds of subcontractors. Yes. And all the rest of it. It's pretty impressive, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, I it's the sort of thing, you know, probably with my play money pot, I'd put a bit in it, and with money I could afford to take a 50% loss on. So does it float your boat, Paul?
Yeah, no, it's definitely in a good space. It's growing, and there's no doubt about it. I think investors or shareholders will be biting their nails mid-2027 when this contract in California comes up for renewal. And that will be when the rubber hits the road on it, which is not far. We're only talking 2 years' time, and that's what they have to really prove, that it works, and nobody else is going to get close to it. But hey, you know, there's so much. The problem is, you can have the best product, you can have the best systems, the best customer service, but it doesn't mean you're going to win in America. And there's a lot of politics associated with it. And
yes,
no, I don't know. You're sort of the quest of sort of like Washington and what they decide to do as much as anything.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And it very much fits into the sort of bracket of the type of thing you could see Elon Musk and Trump cancelling, couldn't you?
Yeah.
But I think one of your fund managers in an interview covered that point and said, yeah, but it's a contract. You can't just tear it up. If they do cancel it, there'll be penalty clauses, and the company could be very well remunerated with the penalty clauses, which was, you sound like you agree on that point.
No, it is. Yeah, that was Richard Penny from Crux, and there's definitely exit costs to be huge to do it, to lose it now. But when it comes to renewal and there's no exit cost in 2027, then that's going to be when the rubber hits the road. So, who knows? But you're right. If they can win a lot more contracts, then it probably would be off the back of this one in other jurisdictions in the next 2 years, then it won't be as much of a sort of like a, dial shifter.
Yeah, and I think the other thing is, you know, if it was the usual AIM cash burner with a 6 month or 12 month cash runway, I wouldn't bother. But the fact this thing's cashed up, the cash is going up, it's 22 million in net cash. Mm. I think that makes me more willing to take a punt on it, because there's no dilution likelihood, even if things go wrong. Quite interesting.
Yeah. Okay, good. Let's stay in the healthcare. We've got another darling stock that has done really well over the last 5 years. That's come off. He had a bid from Keensight Capital, I think it was. Ooh. NIOX, we're talking about, which is a diagnostic asthma business. Lots of good cash, been really well run. And then it came off. And then I don't know your latest views. It's now reasonably cheap, actually.
Yeah, I wouldn't go as far as that, but yeah, it's I would have stopped the sentiment reasonable rather. Okay. Cheap. But yeah, we covered this in my report on Friday last week. This was a particularly interesting one, in that it's the first time I can recall that a bidder has actually walked away from a bid stating that is because of recent market turmoil and macro turmoil. So Keensight specifically said that in their announcement, and it dropped a hell of a lot down to, I think on the day it dropped to 56p. So it was down a big percentage drop. I think people clearly should have sold in the market before, and that's hindsight, but I did actually say it at the time. It said, look, this thing is, they're taking it out on a PE of 30. Yes, we know it's a good company, but if that bid does fall through, you know, you've only got downside risk, you haven't got really any upside. So it dropped 20% to 56p. I looked at the numbers, but it also put out a mini trading update, NIOX, this is, saying Q1 revenues were up 18%. I don't think it said anything about profits, though. But I took the view, actually, that was a 56p. I said forward PE of 21 looks quite reasonable to me, given that this seems to, it's profitable, it's got a good balance sheet, seems to have good products, but I don't know anything about that. To do with Asper, isn't it, Paul?
Yeah, it's basically a razor blade model. They sell the consumables that doctors use to diagnose asthma in patients. They've got a big business, I think, in Japan, well installed. So, yeah, it's a bit of an annuity, and the more they can sell, the more machines they can get into, you know, hospitals and doctors' premises and health centres around the world. It just becomes effectively just becomes a way to print money. 80% gross margins, these things are, and just the tests.
Gosh. And the very fact that Keensight, I don't know who Keensight are, but the very fact that a bidder was prepared to pay 30 times for it is a great indicator that this is a really good business, doesn't it? So, I think it's worth taking a fresh look at this one if you understand what it does, which, of course, I don't.
Yeah, you were right on the call in terms of, you know, taking top, because if you'd have asked me, I'd have kept it. I'd have, you know, run it at 81p thinking, because effectively Keensight were a buy and build venture capitalist. So I got this one wrong. I would have held it and then seen it go down. So well done there. Anyway, good call of yours.
Yeah, the other thing just that reminds me on venture capital and private equity, I read a mainstream press article saying they are seeing cash outflows. Because, you know, a lot of the crypto money and the tech boom money found its way into venture capitalist private equity funds. And apparently now people are actually high net worths who've taken a big hit on tech downturn are actually taking the money away. So if that's true, then we might see fewer financial buyers wanting to pay premium prices for takeover bids. And we might see more bid situations that are currently in progress actually fall by the wayside. So I think anyone who's holding something that has a potential bid in the offing probably needs to take a more sceptical look at those. I put up I did a print off of my spreadsheet where I published that straight up within the hour of the NIOX news, saying these are the current live bid situations. Yeah. You know, have a look at them and see. You might need to be a bit more cautious, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, you can argue it a number of ways, can't you? Because if interest rates do come down, and that's one thing, which is that the economy is slowing off. I think interest rates, they've just been reduced in the Europe today by a quarter percent. That's before we came on. And they're going to be reduced in the UK faster than I think expectations, because, you know, growth is definitely slowing off. And they're going to come down faster as well in the US. And if you do that, then invariably that gives more cash in, you know, cheaper funds for the private equity guys. Plus it jump starts the IPO market in terms of gives them better valuations using a lower discount rate. And once you get lower yields, et cetera, and the IPO market works, then that gives the private equity guys some monetization for their existing portfolio that they can then redeploy in, you know, basically.
Good points. And I think another thing I spotted in the mainstream press was that the mortgage, the 2 and 5 year fixes are now dropping to as low as 4% from Santander and Barclays. Right. And, you know, your average person who's got pent up demand to buy a house doesn't get a stuff about what tariffs in the US are going to be. It's not going to affect their decision. It's going to be they're getting an above inflation pay rise that they probably just had in April. They're seeing prices in the shop and prices they're filling up their petrol tank dropping. And you know, I think you're going to see a recovery in the house builders. Yeah. And we had, didn't we, Barrett Redrow recently said it was on, you know, in line with plan. So I think we can actually start to be a bit more optimistic about the housing market and then the building supplies companies. So I think maybe this tariff furore has delayed recovery in some sectors, but I still think we should be quite bullish. As you say, quite rightly, there are some silver linings to some of this.
I'm going to be loading this weekend because it's Easter. I'm going to be going down the garden center and loading up on my garden gnomes from China that are dumping them in the UK.
Yes. Oh, I must tell you a funny story. I did a Temu haul, you know, which you do.
Oh no,
I ordered all this rubbish on Temu, and the price gets cheaper and cheaper until you buy a big bag of stuff for about 18 quid. And so somebody nicked it was on my doorstep outside my flat. Somebody nicked everything, but they left behind the garden gnomes.
Well, shove them up here though, I'll have them. No, yes. I won't. No, I won't. Oh, okay, we're running short.
Dunelm put out, this is one I hold, they put out an encouraging update today.
Yeah.
And they've said, again, so growth has accelerated a bit. So I think that the consumer stocks are looking good.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, as I say, you've got to be very, I mean, yeah, they did. I'm just looking at the price. Let me just put that on. Yeah, it's really shot up, hasn't it? That, up 11%. Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt about it. There's a lot of bad news in these retailers. We've got a question coming from Rebecca. She's asking about Hunting that I think you own, and she says she owns. The share price just keeps going south. They came up with was it trading up to date this week? I think the order book was a bit soft, but the actual basis of the like for like revenues are pretty good. Anyway, what was your take on it?
That's exactly right. The it was an inline update. I think a Q1 update might have been yesterday or the day before. Yeah, I do hold personally. I actually doubled my position. It was only a very small position, so I've topped it up. It looks really, really good value. Stunning balance sheet. One of the best balance sheets you'll ever see for an engineering type group, which gives them a lot of optionality for more acquisitions that they're poised to do. You know, they've got a small activist investor, only 3 or 4 or 5%, but they haven't got enough to really force anything, who said, oh, they need to use their excess capital to do acquisitions. Well, he's pushing on an empty door. They've already said that's what they're going to do. It's down in sympathy with the oil price for sure. But if we believe what Hunting says, these are niche products, quite high margin, high operating margins. They said they've not seen any deterioration in orders or outlook from customers, but of course there could be a delay. So I think the depleting order book is the issue for sure. We need to see contract win announcements from them topping up that order book for the big orders that they won a year or two ago that they're working through. But I just love that balance sheet, and it's a longish term position for me. Do you like it, Paul?
Yeah, I think it's very, very cheap. No doubt about it. And I actually think the activist you were talking about, Oasis Management, they actually do have a big stick. Not so much they only got 5%, but they've got a track record in this, and they managed to kick out the management team at Premier Foods, and also did the same at. Oh, there was another business that owned Frankie and Benny's and Chiquito's. I can't remember what it's called.
Oh, Restaurant Group.
Yeah, no, they kicked. So they've got a good track record. And anyway, they're asking, or they're telling the management team, they want to see a return of capital of $145 million, which if you do this today's price is 69p a share. So, you know, I mean, it's interesting. Anyway, I think once you've got that.
The company can easily afford that. I mean, it's net cash and it's got huge inventories and receivables. So, yeah, I mean, management see, I've listened to the webinars from Hunting, and management sound very super bullish on it. Mind you, they are American. The top guy is American. And as we know, American CEOs are, we're going to smash it, you know. But now something I discovered yesterday I didn't know about Hunting. It's 16% owned by a family whose surname is Hunting.
Oh, really? Oh, wow.
Yeah, that was in the broker note, which might make it more difficult for an activist. But yeah, I mean, look, shaking things up a bit, even if it's just talk, could stir up some interest in the stock. So I really like it. But you do have that risk of I think this year's revenues, calendar 25, I think it is, are pretty much in the bag. They said yesterday they've got visibility, almost complete visibility. The question mark is over 26. So, yes, Rebecca, we do need to see that order book. We need some contract win announcements.
Okay, good. Got a quick question. Building Products Company from Emil is asking about James Latham, which is a timber merchant, is it, or something?
Yes, garden fences. I always say it's garden fences, and apparently I'm talking out of my...
proverbial.
Proverbial, yeah. No, this is a lovely business. Absolutely great. Amazing balance sheet. The sort of balance sheet you can only get from a family-owned and run company. They just pile up the cash, pots of it. So, but because the family control it, probably nothing will happen. They just like to have a comfort blanket on sitting on $200 million in excess working capital, you know. Yeah. But no, it's a lovely business. Low PE, decent divvies, stunning balance sheet. Seems to have a really good defensible market position as well on various timber products. So, yeah, like it a lot. It's illiquid, though. You know, your quoted spread on it is about 5%. So it's only worth buying if you can get a long way within the spread. And then not trading it, just hold it forever, and you'll probably do well. Major multi-bagger over the long term.
Yeah. Okay, got a last question from Adrian. He's asking about Renishaw, which is, again, is turning to a bit of a ski slope. It was a buy, well, it is a buy and build specialist engineering group. But if you ever look at the shares, they've really come off a lot. I can't believe it.
I'm going to have to defer to you, Paul. I haven't looked at this one at all, I'm afraid. So you brief us on it.
Yeah, I would say, you know, it's been a buy and build strategy. They've put together a really good group of niche businesses, engineering businesses, and the way to value it and see whether it's an opportunity is to do a sum of the parts, which takes a long time to do. But you need to look at the detailed notes and then put a, you know, a longer term sort of valuation on it. And I think it's got a good solid balance sheet. I think their owner or one of their founders who started it has stepped away, which has perhaps caused some of the uncertainty. And then you need to know overlay maybe some tariff risk, because they probably supply a lot of the specialist products into the US as well. But hey, God, there's a flipping lot of bad news already in the price. I think you've just given me a great idea, Adrian, to do a bit of homework over Easter. That may add to my list, because half the price for a quality firm like this is definitely worth having a rummage through.
Yeah, that does look interesting. It's lost half its value just in the last 12 months, hasn't it? I bet you, though, the forecasts have been reduced a lot. Yeah, they have come down, not disastrously. The forecast earnings looks to have fallen by about a quarter to a third in the last year. But even so, it does looks to have a strong balance sheet. Price to tangible book is 1.9, so you're only paying less than 2x tangible. Yeah, could be interesting. And what is it they do? Is it oil and gas again?
No, it's specialist engineering. It will go into sort of R&D and nano stuff and all kinds of really high value. The margins on this thing you could die for. I mean, I can't remember off the top of the head, 15-20% EBIT margins. I mean, this is not sort of like, you know, your metal twisting, metal bashing sort of stuff. This is real high-end stuff. But
it could be interesting. I mean, forward PE is about 14, not especially cheap, but combined with a 3.7 dividend yield, again, that's kind of middling, isn't it? But as you say, for a high margin, quality business, those are not extortionate ratings by any means. So yeah, it could be worth a look, I'd say.
Okay, good. Another bit of homework, actually. This is a final one. This is to help Paul. Sorry, this is a good team game. This is for Wise, that I do understand that you would like to know a bit more about. They're basically an international payment stroke, foreign exchange payments, but they also do lots of banking stuff. And the shares have come down. But they came out with a trading update this week, which I think their sales were up. I can't remember. It was probably double. It was cross-border volume was up 28%. The shares are effectively, the business is absolutely flying. As a bit of anecdotal information, I have a personal Wise account when I go traveling. It is fabulous. It works really well and it's dead cheap. And I've had no problems at all. And my wife has. And I've just moved my HSBC corporate, my business account, to Wise as well this week, because it's so much better than HSB is. Now, I'm only one of about 9 million of their customers, but I would sing for the praises of this business. It is actually, as a consumer and as a business customer, it's so far so good. They seem to be winning market share because they've actually signed up some big banks worldwide, including Standard Chartered and Monzo. Mm-hmm. But it's not cheap. So if any investors got any views, hold them and put them out for next week. And I don't know if you have any quick comments at all on their trading update, Paul.
It was good. I mean, it seems to be the massive explosion in profitability came when interest rates rose, didn't it? So it, as with a lot of banks, it makes money on the money passing through, even if quite quickly, in huge amounts they earn the interest on. Looks very innovative. I think listening to one of your audio is what piqued my interest, actually. They're kind of taking that American venture capital approach, aren't they, of saying, forget short-term profits, we're just going for global growth. And they talked in the announcement about moving trillions of dollars of money. And I think they're currently at around 100 or 150 billion or something. So, I mean, they are absolutely going for it, aren't they, in terms of growth? They talk about board. But again, with all these payments companies, I don't really know how to distinguish a Wise from a Revolut or a... that's the bit, because I don't really know much about the sector, that I struggle with. But it's, yeah, it does look at it. So it's cutting out the conventional banks.
Yes, totally.
Money-changing activities. Is that how you'd sum it up?
Yeah, basically, you've got two traditional banking systems. You've got CHAPS, which we use, and you've got SWIFT, okay? They don't use it. If somebody wants to put money in via CHAPS or SWIFT, then that's absolutely fine. Yeah. But they transfer their money through their own system, which is basically just offsetting each particular account. So they don't have zero friction costs. Hence, they can have a take rate of about 0.5%. The traditional banks, you know, can't compete with that. I mean, just to give you an indication, for my business account, if I wanted to do a foreign currency purchase, like for the Wall Street Journal, each year, which is about $400 or $500, then I'll be basically paying HSBC a $6 fee for doing it. Right. Plus the spread will be really wide, and I'll be paying them at least another £10 just on the spread. Whereas these give you a mid-market spread, and they'll basically charge you like $1.50. I mean, you know.
Yeah, I mean, how is it different from Revolut?
Revolut don't. They're basically more of a bank, and they do all in all type of financial services. So they do things. They basically do banking. They do investments. They do crypto. Whereas Wise basically are a bank, and their number one is international payments, which is effectively the transferring of Forex. They don't transfer the Forex. They just credit their local accounts account with it and agree to the mid-market rate. So no money actually moves, but you see it moving into your account. Therefore, their cost is zero, and they just clip 50 cents off everything. You know, it's buttons.
It's fascinating. I mean, when your fund manager interviewee explained it, I thought, God, that sounds so interesting, because you can see it scaling almost infinitely. Yes. Can't you? That's the attraction. You can look at this and say, oh, well, it's valued at 9 billion. That's a lot. Or 12 billion now, actually, pounds. But you can look at this and think, well, it could end up like Stripe in America, which is worth, what, 500 billion or something. Very interesting.
Payments is a winner-takes-all market. It's scale, and it's basically networking benefits. And these guys seem to now, I personally don't think they have to advertise too much, because like Revolut doesn't, because they get so many people who sing their praises, like, you know, me as a consumer, that people say, oh, I'll try that, you know, why do I want to go on holiday down Benidorm or whatever it is and pay, you know, these guys £50 just for the ability to use my credit card in a restaurant, and when it costs you zero, you just think, okay, well, I'm going on more holidays and saving myself like £200 or £300 a year.
Yeah, it does sound interesting, I must admit. Yeah, I'm tempted to just buy a few and tuck them away, you know, and see what happens.
Yeah, the only downside, is that it isn't on a cheap valuation. It's at 27 times, okay? So it's not exactly that cheap. No. So you just have to get your right. You're looking at a longer term, you know, sort of play, I think.
Yes, I agree. And with that type of thing, if you're just buying it for long term, you have to ride out maybe a 50% drawdown at some point.
And that's what's happened in the past, isn't it? You can see it, you know.
Gosh, yeah.
You know, it's actually come down quite a bit. Anyway, we've run out of time, so happy Easter, Paul. I hope you have a few nice Christmas or Easter eggs that whatever you fancy, there's a lot of your wine.
No, I think, listen, everyone, we've had a hell of a rough time over the past few weeks. We've deserved this break. So the 4 days off, everyone just get out there and enjoy yourselves. That's what I say.
Well, I'm going to be doing some due diligence, I think, on Redisure and a few others. So I'm too sad. Thanks, everyone, for your questions, and look forward in touching base at 2 o'clock next Thursday.
Fantastic. Looking forward to it already. Cheers, Paul.
The Vox Markets Podcast.
Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.